Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinsing, episode 126. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. Today's guests are Gretel and Steve Adams, owners of Sunny Meadows Flower Farm in Columbus, Ohio. Gretel and Steve are young flower farmers whose creativity and determination to earn a living from their land is truly inspiring. This young couple didn't grow up in the agricultural world, so naturally, they consider themselves serendipitous farmers. A food farming apprenticeship sparked Steve's passion for farming, and Gretel was blessed to inherit a 10-acre lot outside Columbus that her father bought in the 1980s. As children, they both loved to be outside playing in the dirt and connecting with nature. As young adults, their farming skills continued to expand with their involvement in the U.S. cut flower industry. Steve and Gretel are trying to live life as sustainably as possible, using organic practices, composting to make soil amendments, heating their house with wood, growing their own food, and making natural soaps, among other things. Living a sustainable country lifestyle includes having a farm-based business. Sunny Meadows Flower Farm is filled with fields of beautiful flowers, including four greenhouse structures that help Gretel and Steve extend the growing season in Ohio's chilly winters and early spring. Sunny Meadows flowers are sold at three seasonal farmers markets in Columbus and through Whole Foods stores in the region. Gretel is also a talented floral designer, and the farm has added wedding floral services, which is one of the most successful sources of income for the farm. Please enjoy our conversation. I know you will be impressed with Gretel and Steve, and you'll find their passion contagious. Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinsing. I'm so pleased to have on the line two of my long-distance friends, Gretel and Steve Adams, from Sunny Meadow Flower Farm in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, you guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, absolutely. And I called you long-distance friends, but I did get to come visit you summer before last, and that was just an amazing experience. And hopefully some of my photos, and maybe I'll get some from you, will bring the listener into your farm. They can see those on my show notes.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. Well, we were joking earlier that I've been calling you 20-somethings, but you are millennials, and I think there's been all this despair in the agricultural world about who are the farmers of the future. And so sometimes you probably feel like you have to be this, like, the spokespeople for young farmers. Can you talk a little bit about Sunny Meadow Flower Farm and what it's like, and maybe what your main crops are? And then we'll talk a little bit about your history.
Well, Sunny Meadows Flower Farm, we are 6 miles from downtown Columbus. So we're considered an urban farm. We're on 10 acres, but we're inside the outer belt of the city. So that's really nice, being close to markets and florists and things like that, the grocery stores we sell to. We had probably about 6 acres in production, but recently, due to a crop failure of sunflowers, we've really cut back the number of sunflowers that we're doing. We're not doing wholesale bunches for grocery stores anymore. So actually, we're in the middle of crop planting now, and we're realizing how much less space we'll actually have in cultivation, like without the sunflowers.
How much acreage had you devoted to sunflowers?
We had about, you know, 3 to 4 acres. I think we had planned last year 17,000 foot of row space for sunflowers last year.
Wow.
And this year we're going down to somewhere around 5,000 feet. So we're cutting it back, way back. We're going to be growing in just over 2 acres tillable land. And that doesn't count the perennials and stuff that we have. So we have planned for next year two acres.
Mm-hmm. For the sunflowers or for all your annuals?
For all crops.
For all the other things.
That's sort of a whole different thing we should circle back on and talk about the highs and lows of disappointments, like crop failures. That must just be a word you never want to hear again. But I admire you both for your
holistic approach to what you're doing. You are trying to live in a sustainable way in every aspect of your lives. And maybe you can talk about what brought you to be flower farmers. And, you know, maybe Steve, you can talk about what brought you to this point, and then how you and Gretel came together to be growing such beautiful flowers for the people of Columbus.
Yeah, this is going to be our 7th year. So 7 years ago, I had met a flower grower here in Columbus that was specializing in sunflowers, zinnias, and cosmos, taking them to the farmer's market. And that was what he did. He was a substitute teacher during the winter and then did this during the summer. He used to have an orchard. So he was, had 40 acres of fruit trees that he kind of still took care of a little bit, but not really. So I was really inspired by him, started hanging out with him, working with him a little bit. And at that time, Gretel had inherited this 10 acres just outside of Columbus. So we just started growing a little bit here, but our intentions were to become a homestead, grow vegetables, grow flowers to sell at market, as well as raising livestock.
And living off the land was the original mm-hmm. intention. And then, you know, the busier you get with the farm, the less time you have for some of the homesteading things like canning and
raising pigs.
And yeah.
your livestock, I think, isn't your livestock limited to cats now or something?
Cats and one dog. We had one chicken all summer last summer that would roost above the cooler and we ended up giving her to someone else so she could have other chicken friends. So we don't really do much livestock, but we quickly started realizing how much money could be made off local flowers and looking at the different markets and what other people were doing around the country and trying to implement certain aspects of their marketing into what we can do locally. And, you know, we found this niche product that no one else is really doing locally here in Columbus and kind of went with it. We're inspired by other growers, you know, sure. we communicate with them all the time and they continue to inspire us. And we learn about new ones all the time that are inspiring. And
yeah. So we started out being about 50-50 veggies and flowers. We had a CSA and everything. And the flowers just, you know, slowly pulled us more and more in that direction. So now we're 100% flowers.
Well, is that because if you were really going to look at the bottom line, flowers are more lucrative per square acre than, say, salad greens and carrots? I mean, is that part of the economics of it?
Absolutely. Flowers, what we make per acre on cut flower production is dramatically different than what I was doing when I was doing vegetables. And what, you know, I've heard other vegetables growers say their goal is to get per acre with what we're doing with the cut flowers and that how tightly a lot of them like to be planted really close. So they get long stems. So with that in mind, we are able to do a lot per acre on such small land.
And we plant very densely. So we're cranking a lot of volume out of, you know, the space that we have.
So you mentioned that you had a CSA farm, and then it sounds like the flowers you were taking to the local farmer's market. Was this just like 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah. So we started out with just a couple farmer's markets and then expanded into florists and grocery stores. So now we sell to a lot of florists because we've got a refrigerated box truck. I'm not sure what the number is. But then we also sell to 11 grocery stores, do a lot of mixed bouquets and some like straight bunches. And
wow.
I do weddings, which mainly came out of the market. You know, people sell our stuff at market and they're like, oh, do you guys do weddings? It's like, sure, why not? So that's kind of how it started. And then, you know, it's developed from there. So the wholesale.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So we do a lot of different things, I guess. Which helped when, you know, when the economy went bad and the farmer's market sales went down a little bit, you know, then we picked up with wholesale or picked up with weddings, like people were still getting married. So, you know, having those different things and being diverse helps. If one thing is a little down, then maybe the other thing makes up for it. So,
Well, you're alluding to that whole issue of not having a monoculture or a monocrop. You guys are so organized. You probably do have this wonderful Excel spreadsheet that tells you everything you've planted and what your inventory is. Can you talk about a range? Because I know Steve just alluded to perennials. So, I mean, you've got obviously a whole mix of floral ingredients that you're growing. Can you talk a little bit about that mix?
Yeah, we do. I mean, as far as like seeding annuals, there's over probably 75 different kinds of flowers, and within that, all different colors and different varieties and stuff.
Wow.
And then perennials, we're working on it. You know, perennials are hard because you have to kind of plant them and then wait a while for them to be ready, which I know Patrick talked about in his talk. But so we have hydrangeas. We just planted like 600 peonies last fall. So trying to increase some of the like flowering branches and things that will make us money kind of in the shoulder months or during the off season, willows and sure. things like that. So
once you get those established, they kind of, I don't want to say they're low maintenance, but they kind of keep going even if you are so busy with the annuals you can't get over to the hydrangeas for a while. I mean, they're mm-hmm. they'll be the gift that keeps on giving, I hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also want to state that we also have about an acre and a half to 2 acres that we are resting for cover crops also. So okay. we are resting and rotating our crops.
Mm-hmm. And that's a sustainable practice, right,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it helps us add the green matter, the green manure, the nutrients from the nitrogen-fixing crops. There's a lot that happens with that resting of that land for a year.
So that land will be planted in 2015 okay. Mm-hmm.
So we always rotate like what field is resting for the year.
Well, Gretel, you also mentioned something about shoulder seasons. So I know when I visited, I was impressed with how much you had growing in these beautiful high tunnels and hoop houses. I don't know if I'm describing them correctly, but can you describe how you use those and what they do to kind of extend your season?
Yeah, I mean, we used to be, you know, mainly field crops like May through October. Now we have a heated greenhouse that we plant into the ground, a heated prop house. We actually just added another heated greenhouse, which is still in the works. But so after this winter, we'll have two large heated greenhouses that we plant in the ground, a prop house, and then two unheated houses. So we mm-hmm. now have flowers from March through December.
That's crazy. I mean, you're in zone 6 or something, right?
We just got moved to 6.
6A. Yeah, 6A. We were 5B, so.
Well, that's USDA's. You have snow on the ground, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been really cold this winter. It's been more like a 5B winter, I think. But
oh, my goodness. So, like, for example, you said March. What's coming up then? What will be your first crops that you'll harvest in, you know, a course of maybe the next 10 weeks.
We'll have freesia stock, snapdragons, irises.
Come
out of the heated space first, then some ranunculus and dusty miller, and then the ranunculus and anemones in the unheated space will come on after that.
That's kind of a succession then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we keep those houses minimally heated, so they come on, but we just keep it from freezing. They're set about 40 degrees, 42 degrees.
I know. What is the energy source? Is it gas?
It is
or
gas,
oil?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you show up at Columbus's flower shops in March with your refrigerated, what did you call it? Refrigerated delivery van?
Yeah.
These florists must just do cartwheels. I mean, it sounds like that's just something they're not used to seeing, locally grown product in March.
Yeah. And every year we increase the number of like customers that we sell to, especially with the box truck, especially because we can show up and rather than calling them on the phone, then, you know, they're seeing the product in the truck. And I think after Valentine's Day, you know, with all the roses that they deal with, come March, they're ready for something different.
So how many, how do you do that? Do you have a weekly delivery circuit or what does that mean for the time that you have to commit to running the box truck around?
We run the box truck For Tuesdays and Thursdays. So Monday we are picking for Tuesday's delivery, and then Wednesday we pick again for Thursday delivery. So that's our pretty much our schedule. Every week, every Tuesday, I go to a couple towns outside of Columbus, and then make my way back into Columbus, hit some sell some grocery stores and florists in town, and then come home. And then Thursday is just Columbus. So I'd have a route that I take, and you know, I'll stop at 15 florists. I'll call a few more. So
he's gone all day. Yeah, I'm gone all day.
So it's like you're basically the mobile flower shop, or you know, shop.
And you know, we talk about it gives us the ability to take our whole cooler to the florist, and then they get a pick out of it. You know, we wanted when you were here the last time, we talked to you a little bit about how we wanted to make our place a destination where florists and wholesalers can come pick up out of our coolers here. But then we kind of talked it over and decided we didn't really want all that action at our place. So that's when we decided to get the box truck and go to them.
Well, I think the fact that you're 6 miles outside of Columbus is why it works. And you alluded to that at the beginning of our conversation. Here in Seattle, most of the farmers are 70 to 90 miles outside of the urban core. Mm-hmm. And so that transit just and the cost of fuel just, you know, is burdensome. And you know, you're in a fortunate situation where at least you're getting to the customer pretty quickly, and so you're using less fuel and you're more efficient with your time then.
Yes, exactly. And you know, it's once you kind of get into that rhythm of selling out of the box truck, you know, you kind of find your stride, and it's almost easier than selling out of the cooler at the farm. You know, if a florist shows up, sometimes I feel real confused about what is for sale, what's not for sale. When it's on the box truck, I know what's going on. And so it's kind of like, I feel comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
well, obviously you both have really excellent marketing skills. I mean, you have to be an advocate for your product, but at least you're speaking with authority and knowledge and confidence that it is fresh,
right?
And it was grown sustainably. And I mean, it's probably not, is it hard to sell, or do you find that you like it?
I enjoy it. You know, there are certain things that might be hard to sell. We don't really put Adriatum on there very much because the florists don't buy it up.
So you learn what they want and what they don't want. And, you know, like each year we've increased the amount of Lysianthus, you know, just based on demand. And there are some florists who don't want to pay that little bit extra for something that's local. But, you know, there are, like, we had a florist this year who said, you know, it may be a little bit extra, but every stem is usable and it's perfect.
Wow.
You know, so like, then that makes the difference. But, you know, it takes them buying from you a couple times to recognize that, or for them to see how much longer it lasts or something like that. So there are some florists who, you know, don't even want to come out and see the truck. But then we just stopping there, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, so I guess that's just human nature. In every market, there is going to be this category of florist who's going for the cheapest, no matter where it comes from. And they aren't your customers. They don't get who you are and what you're about.
Mm-hmm. And we actually were pretty fortunate. There was an older couple named the Cooleys, and they were in Stockport, which is, 2 hours away from here, but they used to come to Columbus many years ago, and they're working towards retirement. And so they stopped going further and further. So as they were stopping coming to Columbus, you know, they wanted to pass along their hard work to somebody else and didn't have any kids. So they suggested people call us, you know, instead of calling them. So we were really fortunate that, you know, they had a box truck and they drove around. And so there's some florists that were used to buying from them and used to buying local, and they've kind of primed them for us.
Sure.
And they were doing it, you know, in the 90s before buying local flowers was really even thought about.
Well, and you know, what you're referring to is how flowers used to be sold back before you were born. I mean, the locally. Sourcing was local, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Well, I love the little tagline on the Sunny Meadows Flower Farm stickers that I actually have kept on my desk since I met you. And it at the top, it says local, sustainable, and fresh. And I feel like that overt messaging is really important, that you're educating consumers I suppose these stickers go on the, do they go on the farmer's market bunches or the grocery store bunches?
They're mainly just for grocery stores. So anything that leaves the farm that we're not going to be there to directly like talk to the customer, which is all the grocery store stuff, gets the sticker. And we got that idea from the Arnoskis. We heard Frank talk about the Texas specialty cut flowers and how they like branded their sleeves and everything. And, you know, really saw the benefit of that's your way to communicate with the customer.
Well, and when if you have your website on here too, so I mean, people might take the time to look at our sunnymeadows.com and then see beautiful photos of your farm or your product or read your philosophy. But you have to push it out there. The grocery store is not going to do it for you, right?
No. I'll be at market selling and someone will see the logo or the sticker somewhere and they'll be like, you know, I buy flowers from you every week at the grocery store. So it's really neat to that they do make that connection with that sticker.
Well, is there a big local sentiment in Ohio or in Columbus? Is that something that you're seeing happen in food and so now it's translating into flowers?
Our
generation, there's kind of some young entrepreneurs in Columbus that are opening up restaurants and partnering with farms. And yeah, so there's definitely a movement. We have, you know, one of the edible magazines, so Edible Columbus is here. And so they do a lot for the local farmers and have been supportive of us. I've taught bouquet making classes there at their facility and things.
Wow.
So
there's a pride here in Columbus to kind of, you know, support local artisans, even, you know, if it's not related to farming. So, you know, the flowers have been a little bit harder of a push, I think. There's not a lot going on here in Columbus besides kind of what we're doing with the grocery stores and then some other market farmers. So
do you think, Steve, that that is, because I think we talked about this when I visited you, just that whole idea of, well, we don't eat flowers, so is it that important that we care about where they come from, or is it just more of lack of education?
Both. I mean, it's definitely come around, and I want to give it credit. But there is a part of it that you don't eat it. So it doesn't matter where it necessarily, well, I would say that would make people question whether or not they would want it organically. You know, the organic factor, I think, weighs into whether or not you eat it. People still want to buy that the local flowers. And the more we educate people about where their flowers come from and about the difference between a local bouquet and a grocery store bouquet, you know, the more people are going to be aware of it. So it is an education thing. But, you know, we do educate our customers.
I think when people, and when people meet you and then they have you, you know, you're the face of the farmer, it makes that even come alive more.
Yeah.
I didn't mean. So Gretel referred to or alluded to weddings. I think you are the epitome of the farmer florist in that you probably got into this not planning to become designers. And now that is, you know, a value added aspect of the offerings at Sunny Meadow. Is that correct? Or?
Definitely. I mean, we started out selling just like straight bunches of sunflowers and zinnias and cosmos at market. And then there was an older lady at market who would make these beautiful wildflower bouquets. And so we started making bouquets. And then that's where I was asked, you know, do you do weddings? And then that's kind of how it started. So, yeah. And so now it's become a big part of the business. So we've done, last year we did 49 weddings, which was a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, Steve, are you getting in on the Design Act too? Or are you more of the support system.
Support system. I do know the fun stuff. So I work on the boutonnieres and I box stuff up and I pack stuff. So it's not as artistic as what she gets to do, but that's okay.
Yeah, but he does get to, he built me a chuppah. And so if there's like any big install pieces of it, then, you know, he comes to be the muscle. So.
Wow. Well, I know that you've been working a lot on your own floral design education, and I remember seeing all your posts last summer or last winter, rather, about going to, I don't know, Palm Springs or something to study floral design. I mean, you're really trying to continually expand your own understanding or knowledge of how you work with the flowers that you grow.
Yeah, definitely. As many workshops as I can take, as many designers as I can, you know, follow and get inspired by. And yeah, it also helps because we're in the Midwest. So it takes a little while for trends to move inward from the coast. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can watch what the designers in LA are doing, or, you know, Seattle, or in New York, or any place, and kind of see what trend is going to be coming our way. And kind of be prepared for that. So,
and so how do these brides find you? Is it just word of mouth, or are people seeing, I don't know, Pinterest and website mm-hmm. posts of beautiful flowers and knowing that they love your look?
I think the farmers market is definitely our best form of advertisement because people see our stuff there. We made a portfolio book, which we take to every market and sits on the table. So people like the flowers, they like our style, and we're like, actually, we do weddings too. So they wow. look at the portfolio book. We are a preferred vendor with the Franklin Park Conservatory, which is a local venue around here. And there's a couple other venues as well as like photographers that we specifically work with. So brides will hear about us through there. We do a bridal show also. I just did one actually on Friday at the conservatory, so brides will see my stuff there. And word of mouth, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, having a young bride who all of her bridesmaids are going to get married in the next couple of years definitely helps.
it's job security for you.
Yeah
definitely. Are those wedding parties and couples, they probably fall through into all kinds of categories, but are they valuing the fact that the flowers are from their own backyard, close to where the, you know, the ceremony is going to take place?
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely all different kinds that come, but for the most part, you know, I'm getting a higher percentage of people that are coming to me because it's local and not wow. just, you know, sometimes we're trying to get away from the fact that people think, oh, farm flowers should be cheaper, or the, like the wildflower look, you know, all of those things that brides say that kind of make you cringe because, you know, they think that it's going to make it cheaper. So we're trying right. to get away from that. And, you know, that's what the portfolio book helps, is because I put all the fancy stuff in there, like the chuppah that we built, or big urns that we do, or, you know, the footed bowls that go on the table. Those are the kinds of things that are in the book. So that way they see like, oh, we do more than just like a market bouquet or a mason jar.
You're not just doing, yeah, exactly. You're not just stuck in the mason jar world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for you, you have to make those weddings profitable. And so you want to be perceived as a couture designer who's offering a unique product that basically no one else can get because you grew it. Mm-hmm. So I hope that that continues.
Yeah. Yeah, we're seeing an increase, definitely.
How many weddings do you anticipate doing in 2014?
The goal is to not do any more as far as a number, but to do fewer, like higher dollar weddings.
Sure, so, sure. I think that's working smart. So what else is on the horizon for 2014? It sounds like you have had to make some changes because of the sunflower situation. What are you? Anything new that you're planting, Steve?
As Gretel said, we're really increasing our Lizzianthus production. So I'm really excited about that, as well as having the extra heated greenhouse space for stock. We're gonna have a lot more stock early in the season. Mm. And the ranunculus in the heated space I'm really excited about, because we had a 4-foot section last year just trying it, and the ranunculus was awesome. It was amazing looking ranunculus. So we put a whole bed in it this year to see kind of what ended up coming out of that.
So you're really experimental then. You'll be willing to try something that maybe conventional wisdom would say would be tough to grow, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we experiment with our densities. We experiment with trying different things in the fall that they don't necessarily say you can. So we try things on a small scale, see how it works. And then the next year, if we think it's going to work out really well, we'll try it. So, you know, and that gives us an idea of kind of how things grow and kind of helps us to know kind of what's going on a little bit more.
Well, I think you're fearless. I mean, I loved reading the story that Gretel wrote, and I'm sure, Steve, you had contributions to it in Growing for Market, this issue about the Lizzianthus. It's funny that you bring that up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it you got some advice from a more seasoned farmer and you just went for it. And obviously now you're, I'm sure you had some experimentation, but it's, that's a crop that you're saying the floral designers in the Columbus area hadn't been able to get locally or see much of, right?
Yeah. They, and, you know, I would call them a couple years ago, I would call a florist and ask them if they were interested in Lysianthus, and 90% of them said they didn't use Lysianthus. And we started to realize that the reason they weren't using it is because the way it came in, you know, the condition that the Lizzies were in when they came into the wholesaler was awful. So they finally got to see what good, fresh Lysianthus was supposed to look like. And we haven't been able to keep up with the demand.
So is it a flower that is sort of seen as a rose, rose-like element in design? I mean, why... What's its exceptional features?
Well, I think it looks like a rose, but it comes in different colors. And I like the, you know, the buds at the top, sort of the dimension that it gives to bouquets rather than being flat like a rose. But it's also long lasting. It can be out of water. You know, like when we sell a bunch at market and people come back and say that it lasted 2 weeks or something, like they just don't expect that from a rose, you know. So it's like a rose, that's, but better, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and obviously then there's that perceived value that's such an intangible. And if people are getting that kind of, you know, life out of one bunch, if you have to increase your price next year or whatever, it's, they'll understand it and have, they already have buy-in on how great this product is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Cause originally, you know, when a florist was like $20 for a bunch of Lysianthus, like that seems high, but when they see how many blooms that is, that's a lot, you know, a lot more than what you would pay for at the wholesaler. Because, you know, if I am doing a bridal show and need to try and order things in, it's like you have to order with the Lysianthus a lot more to get the same like number of buds. So it may be a $20 bunch from us, but it's, you know, much better value as far as what you can actually use.
Well, I think, yeah, and you referred to that earlier when you quoted the florist saying every stem is usable. So that's a different.
Exactly.
It seems like there's just, you know, you're trying to fight against this sentiment that, you know, flowers don't last a long time. Flowers are, you know, are too expensive. All these things that I think have this deep-seated, unfortunate bad rap, but it's because of this, the status of our industry and what has been going on for the last 20 years. And you're trying to like reverse the tide, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's the whole system. You know, they get a box of flowers in and throw half of them away. So.
Yeah. And not very green right there.
Right. And so they're just used to it. They're used to buying them cheap and throwing half of them away and, you know, using a minimal amount of them to get what they need out of it. So what they're getting when they get stuff from us is stuff that was cut the day before, never kept out of water and fresh, you know, once it comes to them. And so they can use every stem. They can make that $12 bunch go a lot farther than that $4 bunch.
That's a brilliant example. So, well, you mentioned that you aren't going to be the young ones in the group of cut flower farmers forever. I think I first met you in your first visit to the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers annual meeting in Tulsa.
It was in Tulsa.
And I've only attended two of those meetings, but I was impressed by the fact that these young, highly energetic, totally positive, enthusiastic couple showed up, and I think everyone kind of fixated on you as the future of flower farming. Yeah, but now you're being asked to teach at national conferences and lead workshops. So it hasn't taken a long time for the roles to change, and now people are looking to you for leadership.
Yeah, this year was our first time kind of being on the other side of the podium, and it was when we talked at the ASCFG event in Worcester. You know, Frank Arnosky came up to us afterwards and said, did you guys come to Memphis to see me talk? And you sat in the front and you asked a lot of questions. We were like, yes, that was us. So, you know, it's nice to to kind of be seen by the people that we've looked up to for so long. Now we're kind of like a part of that. So
they see you as a peer.
Yeah.
Well, so what advice are you giving to anyone young or new to flower growing? I'm sure you hear from people all the time, and you're very generous with your information. Where do people start?
Well, a lot of them that come to us are growing flowers and vegetables. And so we kind of start by encouraging them to think about growing just flowers. Because
right.
We've noticed such a big difference. It was what changed our whole operation. It kind of got the ball rolling to really focus on efficiencies. And it was just the beginning of that. If someone is growing both flowers and vegetables, keep good records and look to see what your profitability is per crop and per, you know, whether it's vegetables or flowers.
Right.
So
that's true. I mean, you know, the analytics of knowing why am I growing this and is it costing me money to grow it? I mean, because I know we all have our favorite flowers that mm-hmm. maybe aren't as lucrative as others. Do you have any kind of babies that you'll never get rid of just because you love them so much, or are you ruthless?
Well, I mean, there are things that, you know, it's kind of like it has a few chances, and then if it doesn't live up to expectations, sometimes it'll get cut. So I mean, there are things that kind of get, I guess, demoted from from production to maybe just me having a small patch for my weddings, if it's something that I want, but we don't want to grow a lot of. Mm-hmm. So
that's
there's
fair.
Kind of, you know, different steps, I guess. So there are some things that get totally cut out.
There were about six crops this year that we cut completely.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the ageratum. I mean, sure, that's going into the mixed bouquets.
Yeah, we grow
right?
a lot of ageratum. So that's something that we do. So, I mean, but we just grow it just for bouquets. So when we're picking that on opposite days to get ready mm-hmm. for the next day's bouquets. We're not really picking it and bunching it. So it's easier to harvest. We just cut it and throw in a bucket. Mm-hmm. Where the other stuff, the more specialty stuff, we're cut, bunch, and then put where it goes.
And you're treating it, you're trimming it
right.
and treating it a little bit, yeah.
And every year, you know, with the more like record keeping that we do, the more data we produce, and then the easier it is to keep track of how much a crop really makes you. And, you know, each year we do more enterprise budgets to figure out, you know, what we're actually making per square foot. And, you know, there are some crops that maybe aren't that profitable, but maybe have value somewhere else. You know, like dianthus is not one that we get, you know, high dollar value for, but it also comes on in the spring and fills out bouquets when we don't really have a lot else. So there are other things
right.
that, you know, also weigh into the value of the crop.
It does. It plays its role in that mixed bouquet, and it then justifies the price of the mixed bouquet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we've eaten up 30 minutes very quickly. Now that we've got our technology working so smoothly, we should do this every week. how shall we wrap this up? I'm wondering to offer you a chance to add anything that I haven't asked you about, that you know, the people who listen to this podcast are flower farmers and florists, and it's kind of an insular world, but we all think it's really important. Anything that you, either one of you want to throw out there for people to think about?
Well, we'll be talking at the Texas Growers School in Fort Worth at the ASCFG event, about wedding stuff. And then,
oh, wow. That's in March, right?
Yeah.
March 4th or something.
Yeah. So we'll be
okay.
down there in March presenting.
Awesome.
And then we're kind of in the works talking about having a farm workshop here this summer, kind of like a farmer's business school, where we talk about crop planning and budgeting and all of the things that I've kind of touched on in the Growing for Market articles that we've been talking about, but, you know, do more in detail workshops, so that people can get more of an idea of the logistics and planning side of the farming world.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. So I'll be sure to add the information about the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, Texas Grower School, which is coming right up. And it's great to know that you'll be both presenting there.
Yeah.
with your probably lots of people who were your heroes, and now you're on the podium with them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a lot of flower heroes, and you know, that's what the association has done, is it's made it so that we can actually meet these floral heroes and get more floral heroes. So it's pretty awesome. We're going to spend some time at the Arnoskis and kind of pick their brain for a couple of days. So it's like a dream come true. I want to go to Star Valley this winter still and see what he's got going on in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. That sounds great. I don't know about Star Valley.
They do a lot of woodies.
Oh, okay.
They have a lot of bittersweet, and they're in Wisconsin.
Oh, good. So. I'll check them out. And then if people are interested in being on your mailing list to learn about, for example, a farm business workshop this summer, they can go on to oursunnymeadows.com and sign up to receive your newsletter, right?
Yeah, right now we need to do some website updates, so the actual button to join the newsletter is not quite on there, but we're working on it. But they could always send us an email and I can add them that way. So
great. All right, I'll put your email address on my show notes. Okay. And
there's also our blog and mainly our Facebook. We do most of our updating through Facebook, but we would post stuff on the blog too about the workshops.
Okay. Oh, good. I'll be sure to put that link on the show notes too, so people can find you. But it's great. You're bringing your expertise to, you know, the world through social media, obviously. But there's nothing like visiting your farm, and so I can see why people would rather get to Columbus so they can have that you know, personal experience rather than, you know, just watching you through a Facebook post.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Wow. Well, thank you both so much for being on the line, and we will, we'll publish this next week, and I'm looking forward to sharing your voices, your enthusiasm, your story, and also lots of photographs, with people who follow this podcast. It's really generous of you to share your story with the world. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for everything that you do also to encourage local flowers and by purchasing local flowers. Yeah. It's awesome.
It is my pleasure. Oh, thanks. It's my pleasure. And I'm fun to do it with people like you guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me in this episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. I'm so pleased to have been able to introduce you to Gretel and Steve. On their website, they write, "Our mission is to educate the public about the quality and base life of local flowers. Although you can get flowers for dirt cheap, flown in from the equator, the workers there do not have the same rights and protections, and there are fewer restrictions on chemical use. So who knows what you are really buying? As a farm specializing in all naturally grown fresh cut flowers, we are trying to show people just how important supporting your local flower farm really is. I applaud that message, and I hope that you'll visit my website, deborahprinzing.com, to see lots of fun photos of Gretel and Steve on their farm and follow links to their own work. Because of your support, listeners have downloaded this podcast more than 5,500 times since last summer. I thank you for taking the time to join my conversations with flower farmers, florists, and other notable floral experts. If you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. You can find that link at my site, deborahprinzing.com. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holtkertz. Learn more about her work at hhcreates.net.